So every night at 5 o'clock when the TV news starts, Essex and I are these fierce competitors, but tonight, happy collaborators. The 7th Congressional District here in Washington, it has only had one representative, if you can believe it, for nearly 30 years, but it has had four different geographic configurations. Those come after each of the zero-year censuses. Currently, the district is longer and more geographically diverse than most people realize. Here's where it spans, from Vashon Island and Burien in the south, up here through the city to Shoreline, and finally to Edmonds, the northern boundary. So the 7th District is not just Seattle, though sometimes it seems that way. The three major candidates vying to be the new face on the 7th are here. They are in alphabetical order by last name, Jayapal, Pramila. She is in her first term as the state senator from the 37th District in southeast Seattle. Joe McDermott, he represents West Seattle and Vashon Island on the King County Council, where he's been for 6 years. And finally, Brady Walkinshaw, he's in his first full term as a state representative from the 43rd, which comprises Wallingford, Capitol Hill, and even parts of downtown, including the block we're on. So these three elected leaders, all hoping to be a new elected member of Congress. Please welcome them all.
It is an honor to be here with CR and with our candidates. We hope to have a discussion that helps you sort of sort out the differences between the candidates. And to add on to something that CR said, a person may not move, but the 7th District does. I live near the Central Area Senior Center. I used to be in the 7th District. Now I am in the 9th. So the 7th District doesn't include all of Seattle, not anymore. Quite a diverse district. So let's ask our candidates to tell us, just take a minute, and tell us a little bit why you are motivated to run for Washington 7th. And, we'll just go in alphabetical order this time. Maybe we'll go in reverse alphabetical order next time. But Pramila Jayapal, what motivated you to run?
Thanks so much, and good evening, everyone. It's great to be back with City Club and here at the library. I am an immigrant from India. I came to the United States by myself when I was 16 years old for college, and it's that opportunity that I got that really has led me to spend the last 25 years of my life fighting for opportunity for others. First on the outside as an activist and an organizer, helping to start One America, what is now the largest immigrant advocacy organization after 9/11, taking on the Bush administration, stopping illegal deportations, organizing tens of thousands of people for comprehensive immigration reform, helping to pass the $15 minimum wage, and leading the largest voter registration drive in the history of the state. But I realized that we need more of us in government representing regular working people across this country, across this district, across this state. And so that's why I ran for office. And now going to Congress for me is going back to many of the federal issues that I've worked on for a long time, but also making sure to use the political platform to organize for good policy on the inside and outside, to pass good legislation around climate change, minimum wage, around expanding access to affordable education. Time. And I'd love to be your representative.
Joe McDermott.
I've spent the last 15 years delivering proven progressive results, 10 years in the legislature and over 5 years now in the King County Council. The results I've delivered including passing statewide campaign finance reform, which is why Seattle has its Fair Elections Now Act, sustaining Metro Transit through the Great Recession and expanding light rail throughout the region, and fighting for and achieving civil rights and marriage equality for the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender community. As your member of Congress, I'll continue to deliver real results for our district. But we've got some big issues that we need to tackle, beginning with the public health crisis that is gun violence. We must ban assault weapons and hold manufacturers liable for their weapons in our streets. And we must overturn Citizens United and return our political process to average Americans. Results matter, and I've delivered. I ask for your support to get there and get things done. Thank you.
Brady Walkinshaw.
Thank you very much. It is really a pleasure to be here. So my story is I grew up about 2 hours north of here in a little farming town called Sumas, Washington, up on the Canadian border. My dad farmed vegetables, organic vegetable farmer, worked in agriculture. My mother was a public school teacher, and she immigrated here from Cuba in the 1960s with her family. They were peace activists. My grandparents actually met in 1947 at the Quaker Meeting House in North Seattle. And I have spent the last 10 years of my life thinking about how our country can have a more nutritious and sustainable food system. That's been my professional life. And when I went into the legislature 3 years ago, I went in with a very strong belief that we can make things better when we can work together and solve issues and get things done. And it's why I have developed one of the strongest progressive track records over the last several years in passing legislation on criminal justice, passing landmark legislation on mental health, tackling chemical dependency and addiction in our communities, and tackling homelessness and housing issues that have really been groundbreaking for our communities. So I'm running for Congress because I'd be so honored to represent you and take that to D.C. because we live in an extraordinary home in the Northwest.
Thank you all. Brady Walkinshaw, you get our first question, but I'd like all three of you to answer it. And you know, if you've been here and meeting people and in conversations, maybe not checking your phone, you may not know that there has been a terrible tragedy in France tonight. There has been what appears, at this early stage, to have been a terrorist attack at a Bastille Day celebration in the city of Nice. Reports at this hour are that 75 people have been killed. A large truck drove into the crowd. There were many shots fired. Each of our candidates came to this race with priorities on their mind, but the news can change those priorities and the priorities of voters. So for each of our candidates, and Mr. Walkinshaw, I answer first, what federal action would you push for now to make sure something like what happened in Nice, France tonight does not happen in this country?
Yeah, I think our country is grieving right now, and I think this world is grieving. The three actions that I think are just essential is, one, I think the global community needs to come together in a time like this and look at what actions can be taken multilaterally through bodies like the United Nations in response. And I think that you see that right now. You see really coordinated intelligence operations looking into and trying to understand what's happened. But I think what this points to is really much, much deeper systemic issues that a place like ours in the Northwest I think can be part of solving. And what I would specifically bring up there is that I think that our country needs to be strong abroad. I think we need to continue to acknowledge that ISIS is an incredible threat, and at the same time be aware that a lot of actions that we take abroad can have really negative implications over the long term. I think the other decision that came out this week, and I'm not connecting them, but was that the president said that we would continue to keep our troops in Afghanistan. And I think that our interventions abroad need to pull out. I think we need to be stopping our long-term military interventions in other countries and making those progresses toward peace so that we don't find ourselves in situations like this kind of conflict over the long term.
Joe McDermott.
We have another tragedy tonight that we mourn and observe, but it's not the first terrorist attack, it's not the first terrorist activity we've faced. And I think long-term what we need to do is to promote the same values we hold here at home: human rights, civil liberties, economic development. We promote those here at home. We need to make sure that our foreign policy and our national security policies promote the same values abroad. By doing that, we can build a world community where people aren't drawn to terrorism and extremist ideologies. We've had places where that policy has failed to date. Guantanamo Bay. Not only does the mere existence of Guantanamo Bay violate our values, but it has long been a recruitment tool for extremists around the world. The use of drones, expanding the theater of war well beyond the traditional definition, and again, becoming a recruitment tool because of the indiscriminate killing that drone attacks necessarily result in.
Time's up.
Thank you.
Pramila Jayapal.
Thank you. This, I think, is just the way we wake up almost every other day and hear of another attack, whether it's Bangladesh or France or whichever country, tells us that we can't use the same tactics we've been using to try to fight the war on terror. And to me, there's really two pieces to this. One is diplomacy and one is development. We have got to increase our efforts around both. We have to build international coalitions. We can't fight wars based on locations anymore, and I fundamentally believe that war should be the last, absolutely the last answer and never the first. So we have got to use United States leverage to build those international coalitions and start to think about how we tackle some of these issues at that level. On the development side, we know that people are getting recruited. You look at Bangladesh, you look at some of these places where this violence is occurring and people are being recruited, some of the poorest countries in the world. We need to invest in health, human services, jobs, infrastructure in those countries so that people have options other than to go to go into terrorism. So that's what I would like to see happen.
Thank you.
Another question for all of you. Police accountability, it of course has been in the headlines of late here in the U.S. Would you support a federal law that would require the FBI and DOJ to conduct investigations after every police shooting in the U.S.? Take that responsibility, in other words, out of those individual departments and federalize it, starting with Joe McDermott.
We have a crisis in our country, and we see it with police shooting after police shooting. And we see it in the responses, the Black Lives Matter movement today, that we don't have a strong enough response in our local police departments. And so yes, at least in the short term, if not the long term, federal review and investigation would be an appropriate response. Long term, though, we need to change our society and address the institutional racism that exists here that drives the doubt and the lack of confidence in our police and our system. And we do that by ending for-profit prisons. We do that by ending the achievement gap in our schools. We do that by making sure that everybody has opportunity from the earliest opportunity, including doubling the federal funding for Head Start, so we have every opportunity for every youth in our country. I've led on this in King County. In the time I've been on the county council, we have cut in half the number of youth in our juvenile justice facility, and I'm recognizing that we need to do more on disproportionality. Fine. Have invested in mentorship programs for at-risk youth.
Brady Walkinshaw.
Yeah, so the answer, I would say yes, and it's an issue I've led on here locally. I've introduced legislation along with colleagues to actually change the law in Washington State, which is now going to the ballot this year, which looks at how we in Washington State can actually prosecute in cases where you have police excessive use of force by police, whether it's fatal or otherwise. And it's one reason why in Washington State we haven't been able to try sets of cases like the really brutal police shooting in Pasco earlier this year. But I think more broadly, an area that I care deeply about, and I actually think it's an area we're seeing more bipartisanship, is more broadly around criminal justice reform. I was able to bring people together to pass legislation this last year that changes the way that people can get access to jobs as they come out of incarceration. Issues more broadly around how we acknowledge as a society that the way that we incarcerate people and create school-to-prison pipelines and build a society where we incarcerate 10 times more people today than we did in the 1960s, how do we change that? And I think those are actually questions that we're seeing people come together around because it's inhumane, it's not economically sound, it's unjust, and ultimately it's ineffective.
Pramila Jayapal?
Absolutely, I support that. I've been working closely with activists across the country on civil rights issues, and we know that one of the things we have to do at this point is we have to provide for independent investigators in these cases. But also, in addition to that, we should be having a reporting, and there is an act called the PRIDE Act that Cory Booker has sponsored legislation in the Senate. That would require police departments to actually report their shootings to the federal government. That's another very important step. A third important step is to actually make sure that we are lowering the standard of proof that would have to be taken into consideration for the federal government to hold anybody accountable. That standard of malice that we have and intent is it's essentially impossible to prove. So these are some of the steps that I think that need to happen. And for us, issues here are not only about what do we do at the federal level, but how do we reinvest in many of our communities, black and brown communities across the country, so that we can really bring real change and opportunity to those communities.
Another question for you all, similar subject. We'll start with Brady Walkinshaw. Do you support a federal law that would ban the open carry of weapons across the United States? The Dallas Police Department said they couldn't tell the good guys from the bad guys.
Absolutely. That's something that we ought to change fast. And I think if we just look at where gun responsibility legislation is going, the American public is in step with the reality that the way that we allow access to firearms in America is absolutely wrong. And the question that we ask ourselves is, when are we going to get that kind of inflection point in this country that Australia had, you know, several years ago after that tragedy in Tasmania? And I think that we have that. And now that we do, we have to make every step that we can to ban assault rifles. I mean, we have to take every step that we can to protect kids, take every step that we can to actually allow for open carry laws, I think, to be changed. And finally, some legislation I've been working on for a long time, and it's one that I would hope we would be able to push forward, is just allowing local jurisdictions, cities, counties, to be able to act on their own when people agree to start limiting access to really dangerous firearms. And that's something we could do in Seattle together. It's something we could do in King County, but we haven't been able to get to that point that allows us to act, even in a community where we agree on these issues together.
Okay. Pramila Jayapal?
Absolutely. I'm really proud of the A-plus rating I got from the Washington Association for Gun Responsibility here in the state from my work at the legislative level, sponsored a bill called the Child Access Prevention Bill that would just require gun owners to lock their guns up if they have kids in the house and be held accountable if their kids get access to that. To me, that's just simple common sense. And I think we are in this culture of violence. I frankly think that we have, you know, if you look at our statistics, we are the only developed country in the world that has the kinds of gun deaths that we have today. And so we have got to stand up and or sit down, as we saw in the House, taking activist moves, John Lewis taking activist moves in the House to actually demand that there was a vote. Obviously, it didn't work because the Congress came back and didn't bring those bills to a vote. But we need to ban assault rifles. We need to make sure that we are passing responsible gun legislation. And for example, the initiative that's on the ballot right now, I hope everyone's going to vote for that, but that is to keep guns out of the hands of those with extreme mental illness. Simple common sense.
Joe McDermott.
I led the conversation this evening talking about the public health crisis that is gun violence. I've led as the chair of the King County Board of Health in identifying gun violence here in this community as a public health crisis and gathering information. Yes. We need to overturn and not have open carry laws across our country because we must address the 30,000 gun deaths in our country every year. It is a public health crisis. And to address it, we should ban assault weapons. We should have national comprehensive background checks. And most importantly, we should hold gun manufacturers liable for their weapons in our streets, not to be punitive and put them out of business, but because right now they have no economic incentive to make a safer product. By holding them liable, they then have the incentive to enact technologies that are being used in other parts of the world, like fingerprint technology and built-in locks, that they are not having the incentive to do today. By holding them liable, we have that opportunity. We've had too many deaths in this country. We must address gun violence.
Thank you.
A specific question for you, Pramila Jayapal. Big background in immigration issues, a lot of experience with that topic. Be realistic. What immigration reform could actually be achieved in 1 2-year term that you're applying for here?
Well, I actually think we could pass the bill that we passed in the Senate with 67 bipartisan votes in 2013. We know what the policy is. We actually have built the public support. Wasn't always the case in 2003 when I started working on the issue. I helped write pieces of the bill that passed the U.S. Senate in 2013. And I'll tell you that while it's not the perfect bill, it does provide a path to citizenship. It does increase work visas for businesses. It does protect families and reunify families and protect civil rights. We could have passed that bill, CR, on the floor of the House. We actually had the votes. We had enough Republican votes and Democratic votes. And so Paul Ryan has actually been an ally on this. Now, whether or not he continues to get pulled over to the right, depending on what happens in this election, I don't know. But he has been willing to speak out on this before, and I believe that he also has some pressure to pass immigration reform from all the sectors of our community. This is an issue that is not just the right thing to do for America, but it is also, it will bring $1.5 trillion into our economy over the next 10 years.
Joe McGovern, let's talk about one of your signature issues, Citizen United, big money in politics. You want to repeal Citizen United. You've called it repealing that ruling a top priority once in Congress. But the Supreme Court has made that a constitutional right. How do you repeal a constitutional right?
It is a constitutional amendment that is required to overturn Citizens United, and it would be my first bill as a member of the U.S. House of Representatives, my first piece of legislation. And that is because independent expenditures, that outside money that flows into a race, into an area, unrestricted, unreported, secret, really corrupts our democracy. We must condemn that, and that's why I have asked all of the candidates in this race to join me in signing a People's Pledge, just like Elizabeth Warren and Scott Brown did in their 2012 Massachusetts race, to reject outside money, demand that it stays out, and really speak up for our values, values that we all profess to hold and that this community holds. We have the opportunity to lead and to sign a People's Pledge, and I invite everyone to join me in doing that.
But is that truly a goal that can be reached? If I'll interrupt and I'll give you another 10, 15 seconds. To pass a constitutional amendment is an extremely high bar in this country. Is that really a goal that's realistic to hold out to people?
We must pursue that and other avenues at the same time. But remember, Essex, there are 16 states who have already called for a constitutional amendment, and we have the opportunity with Initiative 735 on our ballot this fall to add Washington to that list, calling on Congress to pass a constitutional amendment and send it to the states.
Thank you.
Brady Walkinshaw, you have said on several occasions that climate change is your top priority, what drives you in this race. Give us a sense about how you would go about that. The first legislation you would sponsor, would it be a carbon tax, a limit on carbon emissions? Where do you go with this priority?
Yeah, thanks, CR. This gets to why I'm running for Congress. And I think I'm running for Congress. We've been talking a lot about national issues here. But I'm running for Congress because of the power of this place in the Northwest. I mean, I'm running for Congress because of some of the things that John Scholes actually talked about at the beginning, that we live in the most dynamic, innovative, changing urban center in the United States. And I think that we have this opportunity here as a community in the Northwest to really shape and influence federal issues, but also deliver back home in some really very concrete ways. So when it comes to climate, I think we have this tremendous opportunity to model what it looks like to the country, what it is for an urban center to be sustainable. And if we do that here, I mean, that's federal policy. It's why I'd want to serve on our Transportation and Infrastructure Committee in Congress. If we can do that here in the Northwest, and, you know, specific federal policies, it's how do we put more money into transit funding. It's how do we develop density in urban areas in the right places with the right federal incentives and housing policy so we have a very, very strong urban agenda that creates equity, social justice, growth in the right ways. And if we can do that to the country, I mean, we have done a great service. And nationally, I mean, the federal issue ultimately we need a price on carbon, which is a carbon tax. So we can, right. There's your answer, yeah.
Let's get back to a question
for
you.
I'm sorry about that.
Let's get back to a question for you all, and a question that really concerns our surroundings here in downtown Seattle. Pramila Jayapal will ask it of you first. Oh, I'm sorry, Joe McDermott will ask it of you first. Downtown Seattle, like other urban centers on the West Coast, it's currently experiencing a rise in the number of those sleeping on the streets. That's oftentimes coupled with addiction and untreated mental illness. We keep getting told that the solution is additional federal funding, federal action. So what would you as a member of Congress do to solve this issue?
I stood with the mayor and the executive last November when we declared a state of emergency on homelessness. And it's because the county and the state, the county and the city are doing as much as we can with the resources that exist and the knowledge we have, but we need stronger funding partners with the state and the federal government. We must fully fund the McKinney-Vento Act to make sure that we're making all the investment we can in homelessness and trust the local areas. We know that rapid rehousing is a better model than the traditional shelter model we have used. We have learned from other regions in the country that a low barrier shelter is a better way to get people in and be taken care of. What we need from the federal government is a strong funding partner so we can meet people where they are in homelessness, whether it's by addiction, whether it's driven by domestic violence. Veterans are overrepresented in our homeless population. And particularly troubling to me is the fact that of youth and young adults who are homeless, up to 40% of them are lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgender.
Okay. And Brady?
Sure. I would just start by talking a little more broadly about this question with some values. One is that I believe that homelessness is man-made. And the second thing I believe is that housing is a human right. And when we talk about this, there are also structural issues that have led us to the homelessness crises we have. About 20 to 30% of our homeless population are veterans. So when our country has been at war for over half my life, we're in a process of actually creating that supply because we know what's going to happen when people come back into our society. And when we think about federal policy, you know, in the 1970s, we had about 600,000 inpatient mental health beds in this country. And today we have 40,000 because we've systematically divested in our mental health system in America. And we've put ourselves in the situation where we are, where we haven't funded community-based mental health. Yes, McKinney-Bento, but we've also just cut federal funding across the board for homelessness. And I would stand up for that. I would champion it. We know the policies we have to get right. And that's the sort of thing that we need leadership on. It's part of demonstrating to the country in Seattle what a strong city can look like.
Romilla Jayapal, are the other candidates leaving something out here? Is there some more effective way you could bring the money to Washington State?
Well, this is near and dear to my heart because the 37th Legislative District has a lot of folks who are homeless, and it's upstream and downstream, you know, and so I think it's not just putting money into McKinney-Vento, it's actually permanently reauthorizing it because there's no way that you can plan into the future when you only have dollars for the first year. So that's one. The second is around permanent supportive housing, really increasing the number of units that we have for permanent supportive housing, moving to a housing first model, I think is really important. Some of the low barrier shelters haven't been mentioned, and I think that would be, we're doing that here in Seattle, but you know, recognizing that the shelter population that we have is not being housed because we have too many restrictions on some of our shelters. And then I think the other thing that hasn't been mentioned is that the federal government could actually coordinate efforts much better than it currently does. So not only leveraging dollars, but figuring out how we bring all the different agencies together to really have a coordinated response. I think those are probably the main things.
Thank you.
Okay, let's change pace here. Rapid fire. You all get at most 5 seconds.
Is this
and a phrase, not a sentence. Starting with Brady, what committee do you want to serve on?
Transportation and infrastructure.
Joe.
Transportation and infrastructure.
Healthcare, transportation, and foreign policy.
What current Congress member inspires you? What current Congress member do you admire? Pramila Jayapal.
Love John Lewis. Always have, always will.
Joe.
Congressman Norm Dix is a real legacy for our region.
But what about current? Current congressman.
Current congressman. Tammy Baldwin.
I was going to say Barney Frank, but now you're right, that's former. I think Earl Blumenhauer in Portland's doing a lot of great thinking.
Okay, starting with Brady, what current Republican member of Congress would you most want to have a beer with?
Dan Newhouse, actually, right across the mountains.
Okay.
Kathy McMorris Rogers. I've had a glass of wine with her.
Believe it or not, Jim Sensenbrenner, who put forward the most horrible immigration bill, but is really great on voting rights. I'd like to talk to him about that.
Okay. What should the federal minimum wage be? Joe McDermott.
15 now.
Pramila Jayapal.
15.
Brady Walkinshaw.
Copy. Yeah, 15. I agree.
Okay.
Joe McDermott, what one issue would you lead a sit-in on the floor of the House for?
Campaign finance reform. It's tying up every other issue this country needs to face.
Brady Walkinshaw.
Yeah, climate action.
Pramila?
Well, I've done them on immigration, but racial justice, I would say.
Okay. If you do move to the other Washington for this job, what local establishment, Brady Walkinshaw, will you miss the most?
Well, I would stay living here. No, my favorite spot is Smith, the little bar across the street from my house on Capitol Hill.
Pramila?
I love Plum Bistro. Great vegan food, great owner.
Joe McDermott?
My husband would never let me move. Machiavelli, Melrose and Pine.
Okay, word or phrase to describe, best describe the seventh, Pramila Jayapal.
Innovative.
Joe.
Incredible.
Yeah, future.
What two personality traits best serve a member of Congress? Joe McDermott.
Tenacity and relationships.
Pramila Jayapal.
Hard work and vision.
Brady Walkinshaw.
Empathy and listening.
Okay, back to some longer format questions. I'm going to start with you, Pramila. We have some audience questions that came in both now and online. Several involve trade, and let me phrase them sort of amalgamated this way. You all have come out against NAFTA and TPP, and yet arguably we are the most trade-dependent state in the country. How do you keep Washington's economy vibrant if you're against all these trade deals?
Well, I think it's precisely because we are the most trade-dependent state in the country that we should get it right. And I don't believe that we have it right. I think we can have fair trade, but not free trade. And so for me, part of it is making sure that we craft any trade agreements well, that we have environmental partners at the table, that we have labor partners at the table, that we have violations for lack of enforcement of labor laws in other countries that are equal to the lack of to the enforcement of any other kinds of violations on the commercial side, that we don't undermine local regulation around environmental protections or workers' protections, that we don't take away authority from local jurisdictions. These are just some of the, that we make sure we allow for health and pharmaceuticals to be available everywhere and don't extend patent protection so that we're keeping, with that, we're keeping those medical needs away from some of the most needy populations. So those are the things we have to get right. I think we can get it right, but we're not there yet.
Joe McDermott.
We indeed are the most trade-dependent region in the nation. And as your member of Congress, I will make sure that we sustain the Export-Import Bank and press for the confirmation of its board. It provides key loans for businesses of all sizes, particularly in our region, but right now cannot make a loan over $10 million until the board is confirmed. Regarding TPP, I do oppose it because it does not guarantee the environmental and labor protections that this region and this country have fought so hard for and takes us down internationally to a lower common denominator. And indeed, we need fair trade that addresses the environmental and the labor issues from day one in negotiating the agreement, not as an afterthought in side agreements after the text is released to the public.
So I actually think this question goes back to your first question about France. And I think the world is better off when we're interdependent. And I think that breeds security. I think it nurtures affluence. It nurtures prosperity. But I think my concerns with the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and basically every economist agrees that trade actually increases wealth. The question is how that wealth gets shared and at what cost it comes to the environment. And I think we need a Trans-Pacific Partnership. I wouldn't vote for it in its current form. There are some specifics that I think we ought to change. But I do believe that some of the isolationism we're seeing in both the Democratic and the Republican Party right now are actually really concerning to me. And I think that we need more interdependence. So I would really hope that we get to a trade deal that benefits both us and the Northwest, but then also the economies around the Pacific Rim that are impacted by it.
In your political careers to date, what issue have you changed your mind about? Joe McDermott, why don't you start?
I think really some of the influence of money in politics, that when I was first elected, I was probably not as aware or concerned about both the appearance and the reality of how much influence it has. That we're spending as much time as we are fundraising today is a travesty in this race, because it's time we're not out talking to voters. That's why not only do we need to overturn Citizens United, but we need to ban lobbyist contributions anytime Congress is in session. We need to move toward public funding, to take public funding out of races itself. And while I was supportive of campaign finance reform in the beginning, I've become a stronger advocate for it throughout my career.
Brady Walkinshaw, change your mind on anything?
Yeah, I think I've changed my mind over time on the importance of how our prison system works and how strongly I feel about divestment in criminal justice. I don't think I always held that view, and I didn't hold it certainly as passionately as I do today. So that's something that my mind has changed on, and I think it's evolved in terms of my passion on the issue.
Pramila Jayapal?
I don't know if I've changed my mind yet, but an issue that just keeps me awake at night, and depending on the day, I'm in a different place, is body cameras and whether and how we should really use body cameras in this country, whether they're going to ultimately help to achieve the results that we're looking for or whether they're going to hurt. We've got so many videos out there. You know, we see that videos aren't necessarily bringing us justice, but on the other hand, is it helping to have the videos out there so people see the injustice over and over again? And can we regulate them in a way that makes sure that we are not putting more surveillance on communities of color and hurting communities of color versus actually helping to solve the issue? So that one, I could probably argue different sides of that depending on which day you talk to me.
Okay, we have about 6 minutes left. Why don't we go to 30-second questions so we can get some more in? So half the time, but you all can do it. Pramila Jayapal, starting with you, this is a big issue for everyone in the audience, I think. They all came in basically undecided. You all sound very similar. What differentiates you most from your opponents? Pramila, starting.
Three things. One, I've actually worked with the federal government over and over again for the last 15 years. I know how to get things done in Congress. I know I have the relationships to get things done in Congress. Number two, I'm the only person that served in a Republican-controlled majority. It is very different, and I know how to navigate that. And number three, and maybe most importantly, I'm a movement builder. I'm a coalition builder. That is how I've done everything in my life, is engaging people, bringing them to the table, and really making this an issue that we all take on to create political space so that policy change can happen.
I'm the only candidate at this table who has served a full term in the state legislature. In fact, I've spent the last 15 years delivering real results for our community, from affordable housing to transportation and transit to gun violence. It's that experience in knowing how to gain accomplishment within legislative environments that truly sets me apart within this race.
My focus on the Northwest. I mean, I ran for this race. I actually started this race. I didn't start running against the two people to my right. And I started this race just because of how strongly I believed in the Northwest and the importance of this moment for a new generation of leadership from this place to really model to the world and to the country what a strong, sustainable, economically vibrant, but also equitable community in the Northwest looks like. And then in turn, what that can mean for the country. And that's why I got into this race. I think my focus on climate is differentiating, and also my results. I have brought people together and delivered a very impressive record across the aisle.
Okay.
That has had an impact.
Brady, I'm going to throw this one at you. You're the climate guy. What's your position on nuclear power, briefly?
So I think that there are very specific places where it has potential. I think there are some areas in R&D right now where I actually think it's good that we're looking at it. But by and large, I think we ought to be divesting federal money from the upgrading of our nuclear fleet. I think that's an important decision the next member of Congress from this district will take, whether we ought to upgrade the $40 billion nuclear submarine fleet at Bangor, and I would vote against that. I think that we should be downgrading our nuclear arsenals as the United States, whether or not other countries like Russia do the same.
Pramila Jayapal, the question is, as an ex-investment banker, how can you represent the 99% and not the 1% in the 7th.
You know, I came to this country by myself. I said my parents had about $5,000 in their bank account. They used it to send me here by myself to go to college. And so when I came here, there were three professions I was allowed to be. I bet you can guess what they are: doctor, lawyer, or engineer. And so I used my second phone, I only had one phone call home a year to call my parents because we had no money. Used it to tell them I was going to be an English literature major instead of an economics major. So you can imagine the reaction that brought. But going to Wall Street was sort of what I had to do, and it was an amazing experience, but it also was so important to remind me of everything I don't want to do, and it pushed me to social justice.
Joe, a number of questions on this front. The budget deficit, unless I missed something, no one talked about it. No one said it was a worry. No one said it was a priority. Why not? Where are you at in the budget deficit? 30 seconds.
We need to address the budget deficit, and I think we can best do that by making smart investments early. I'm so proud of the work King County did last year in the Best Starts for Kids levy. 3/4 of the county's general fund goes for bad outcomes too late. Criminal justice outcomes, mental health, substance abuse. If we can make early investments in our children and give them every opportunity, then we save money in the long run. We need to be more proactive in investments. I have worked on marriage equality and civil rights in the city of Washington, and the most progressive piece of legislation I've worked on was the Best Starts for Kids levy.
Okay. Question for Brady Rockenshaw and all of you. If you're elected, you're going to be working in the minority in Congress, in a Congress where the majority rules with an iron hand. So how are you going to get anything done?
Yeah. The first thing I did when I was elected into the legislature, or I should say appointed the first time 3 years ago, was my husband and I jumped in our little car and drove over to the east side of the mountains to meet with Republicans in their home districts. And I did that because I grew up in a place where 9 in 10 people in the community I grew up in voted against marriage equality. And I grew up in a very conservative place, and I believe you have to build common ground. And you have to build that. And the reaction I got from people I visited was, we've never had a Seattle liberal come and visit us in our homes. And I think that that matters. It matters for building relationships, and it matters for results. But all the while, you also have to believe that we can make the majority come back to us, because the most important number in Congress is 218.
Okay. Joe McDermott?
It's about building relationships, and that's why I said that was one of the two qualities needed in the member of Congress. You build relationships within your caucus, you build relationships across the aisle. When I was asked to prime sponsor legislation adding the transgender community to our state's hate crime statutes, I did so and got to committee one vote short on cutoff day. I was able to secure the vote of Republican Senator Pam Roach to add the transgender community to our state's hate crime statutes. That's because of a relationship I had built over time. That's how you do things in legislative bodies, regardless of whether you're in the majority or the minority.
Okay. Pramila?
You know, just the issues I've worked on have been so complex and controversial, and we've gotten people there. Immigration reform got 67 bipartisan votes. You know, when John McCain was for immigration reform, before he was against immigration reform, before he was for it, I worked really closely with him and with Lindsey Graham and with others on the Republican side, and I think really it's about finding common ground at the end, like what is the end goal that you want to get to, and sometimes we progressives get caught up in wanting people to agree with steps 1 to 10 of how we get to that end goal, and I really think it's important to think about just that end goal, and you can find common ground.
Thank you.
Okay, 30-second closing statements. We're going to start with Brady because we had started with Pramila on openings. Wrap it all up for us.
Yeah. Well, thanks for having me here. I ran for the seat because I just believe we live in a really amazing place. And I think that over the next, you know, 5, 10, 15 years, this member of Congress is going to have just an incredible opportunity to be a partner to our home, to make it better, more equitable, more sustainable, but also grow in a way that benefits a lot of us. But it also has an opportunity, like very few districts in America, to help get us to 218, to help shape a democratic agenda in this country. And that's why I'm running. I'm running because I think we live in an extraordinary place, and I'd be honored to serve you all in Congress as your next member of Congress.
I've spent the last 15 years delivering true progressive results for our community. 10 years in the legislature and 5 years plus now in the King County Council. In that time, I've been able to accomplish real results from affordable housing to transit and transportation that we didn't get to talk about tonight to gun violence. These are issues that we need to lead on in our community and we need action on the national level. I'm eager to take my experience and deliver those real results because results matter. I've delivered and I'm here to ask for your support to get there and get things done.
I think we're at this incredible moment in history, and it's a moment of peril or a moment of promise, and we need a strong, bold voice that reminds us of who America is and reminds us and engages us in standing up for that vision of a country that is great and diverse, that can have room for everybody at the table, that can invest in people early and make sure that at their end of their lives, we're providing retirement security, that can increase the minimum wage, that can do the things that allow for people to feel respected and fully invested, and I can't wait to get there and do that. Thank you.
You know, we send people to Congress because we would really rather not go ourselves. So let's thank each of these candidates for their willingness to serve.
Good body camera answer. I like your body camera answer. It's very honest. It's a, I mean, obviously it's honest, but it was a very good answer.